The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is David Jeselnik, the head of BI and analytics at Elevate. The the interesting thing at the moment around kind of data, and we've kind of covered it quite extensively, seems to be around the kind of the senior data level, and there seems to be a bit of a push, and we've had like a few different CDOs, and I suppose there's been a lot published around kind of the rise and the how important it is to have that kind of senior data level. I've really yet to talk with anyone who's had kind of a contradictory or a confrontational view on that. A lot of people think it's a massively positive thing to have that kind of that voice at the super senior level. From your perspective, is that something that you've really embraced and look forward to? And obviously, with the career that you've had, has it sort of been one of those things that has maybe not come soon enough?
Yeah, I would say so. So during the early part of my time as an analyst, especially for companies like Worldpay, which now have a chief data officer who I used to work for when he was a finance officer in the division I worked for. Having a data officer should have happened sooner, because as companies have become more and more dependent on their data, it needs to be governed and looked after properly. And the looking at it as something that's separate from technology is key in my mind as well, because I think too many people think data, oh yeah, that's part of tech, but it's really not. It runs on tech in my mind, but what it's doing is very different to tech, because it's just, in some ways, it's more similar to finance than anything else. Finance is a record of what's happened with money, and an understanding of what might happen in the future. And data is almost the same, except it's, rather than just being money, it's everything. So it's the same principle. And finance doesn't sit in tech, so data shouldn't either. That's why I think you see this rise of the chief data officer.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like you say, it's so accurate. And I think it's always been true, but obviously with what we have from a technology perspective now, the things that we can do with data have been elevated, and I think subsequently the attention that the data space has had, along with things like GDPR in this year, have really elevated the status, and I think put an emphasis on the importance of having data at the senior level, because again, it's not one of those things that you can just sort of implement and have a team build, just have a team on the side. They kind of do data, we do our thing, all good, great. No, it's definitely not one of those things. Like it's like, as you say, it's something that, it is systemic throughout the whole organization. So you have to essentially shift the culture, and have these kind of operations work in a completely different way, and it really impacts things rather significantly now, and it's becoming so much bigger than just the technical abilities that the data talent has now. I can imagine that the pressure they feel goes far beyond that, in along the lines of being able to educate and articulate the importance of things to cross-functional departments.
Yeah, that's the thing. Senior data leaders, typically my kind of level and above, are expected to drive revenue. They're expected to drive business strategy, because that's the value of it. If you're not doing that, you're not really getting the value from the data.
Exactly, mate. Exactly. And You know, it's interesting you say like value of data, because that's kind of a conversation that I've had a few times as well. There's still a lot of senior executives that have been quoted in saying that, you know, obviously we're investing massively in data now, but they're not convinced about what, you know, from a layman's perspective, the ROI is on data. So do you think that kind of falls in line with the education side of things as well? And the responsibility that you have is to educate people on what value can you expect, and to set those kind of levels of expectations. I'm sure you've probably heard it before.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is probably the first point on data. It's, you know, how do you get data prioritized and funded within a company? Because the thing that's really true is that you can build a great data platform, collect loads of useful data, you know, keep it in a really good format, really good structure, but doing that in of itself will not drive profit. It's actually the use cases afterwards. So when we talk about ROI to other senior leaders, you can't talk about, oh yes, getting a new data warehouse or whatever else will do that. It's what you can do with it. It's okay, you're going to get better reporting, maybe closer to real time, more detailed insight you couldn't have before. And then moving on to data sites, you know, the models and decision systems that we can build and where you can deploy it, that's where you can really show benefit, because that once you start going into models which make decisions for you, you can simulate how much money you would save or make from those models, and that becomes a really easy ROI case. But the problem with that is that's a few steps down the line from where you start with data. You can't start there, or at least it's very difficult to. You need to start collecting the right data and investing in that way.
Do you sort of feel, you know, to that point that there's like a change in skills or maybe approach that you've had to kind of adapt to? Because it has very much become about almost like a change project in a lot of ways with data now. So do you feel as though it's been a major thing that you've had to kind of adapt to?
Yes, because what's happening is that we're constantly having to work alongside tech, and you have to fit. And the way tech work is the agile methodology typically. And you have, you know, your request for change, and you start in that change process. So you're constantly, any time you want to adopt a new technology, a new BI tool, bring new data in, that is in effect a change to how things are done today, how BAU happens. So yeah, you're constantly having to go through that transformation. And then when you do some of the larger pieces, like migrating to a new data warehouse technology, for example, moving from an on-prem data warehouse to a cloud data warehouse, and maybe cleaning up the data as you go along, that becomes a larger change project.
I mean, you know, taking you back a bit here, but I mean, you know, how different is that line of thinking perhaps to when, you know, you started out your career? And how different is that when you look back? Is there, you know, the way you approach things now, the role and the responsibilities that you have now, probably the level of exposure to probably different departments and stuff that you have now, you know, how different, if you were to look back with the start of your career, have things changed from that point?
It's changed significantly, because depending on the company I think about earlier in my career, and even earlier stages in those companies, what you'd find is you were just given a data set, and it would be, you know, curated for you by technology. And then what you could do was entirely constrained by what was in there. Typically, if it wasn't in there, you'd tell your stakeholders it can't be done. And that would be it. So you'd have quite a static, static ability to deliver. And that's now changing, because we can't afford to just sit on, if there's other data out there which could be of benefit to the business, you can't just exclude it forever. You can't exclude it even in the medium term. You need to get that in the short term. So that's where that's driving forward.
You know, your background, and I think a lot of data people's background, seems to be quite different. You know, there's a lot of varied backgrounds now, and I think it makes kind of sense why that would be the case. But, you know, when you're talking about recruitment and looking at recruiting people, is it, and, you know, from a cultural perspective as well, do you think it's advantageous, and do you think there will get to a point where there will be more of kind of a linear path to get into, you know, various data disciplines? Or do you kind of like the fact that it seems quite varied where people actually come from who end up in data careers?
I think that's a strength because, well, you know, right now we are seeing the beginning of universities offering things like analytics degrees, data science degrees, which didn't exist when I was going to university. Those I could see being useful because they make recruitment easier, because right now when you look for someone who might be a good data engineer, you need like a whole bag of skills. You know, you might look for someone who's got a computer science degree and who's got some experience with data as well. Or, you know, you could find someone who's done something completely different, like maths or physics, or and they're just as good. And so it's very difficult to understand who would be good at any of these key data roles, like data engineer or data scientist. Data scientists in particular is very, very difficult to hire for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, notoriously, right? And
yeah, so I've just gone through that. So I hired three, and two made it into the office. One didn't make it. Yeah.
And, you know, if you were to give it a stab, though, you know, from your perspective, skill set aside, technical skill set aside, you know, what attitude is required now from your perspective? And maybe you kind of see some of those habits and those characteristics in yourself that, you know, you believe are necessary to be successful as a data talent.
You have to be inquisitive. You have to want to explore what's out there. You have to be willing to... Ultimately, every company has dirty data. I've yet to see one that has really clean data. And I think even if you went inside the likes of Google, Facebook, they probably had big pools of good data, which is what they use for their production systems. But they probably still have big pools of pretty dirty data as well. So whoever this data person is, whether it's a data engineer, data scientist, BI developer, or an analyst, they need to be able to deal with that. You know, they'll come across data sets which are partially useful, and they'll need to fix them. They'll need to bring in data from other places in order to fill in the gaps. That's, you know, you have to be willing to roll your arms up. You have to be willing to do different things. You know, even as a data scientist, not many people want to hire data scientists who are pure modelers. You know, you need to be willing to do different activities because it's just part of the job. So inquisitive, willing to be adaptable. You should have a desire to make an impact as well. You know, you should really want whatever you've done to be worth money to a business, or worth, you know, improved customer service to your customers. You know, one of those two outcomes should be the end result of a piece of work you do. That's what you should always want as an analyst or data scientist.
So do you think that it's not sort of natural then, you know, to have those commercial instincts? I hear this a lot, I suppose, with technical people just in general, that it's almost a skill to, you know, identify where the value is to the organization, because it's not a natural thing. You might be not necessarily be inclined to work on a project that, you know, doesn't seem as compelling, or doesn't seem like it's the latest and greatest tech, or doesn't seem like it's the most complex data problem to solve, but nevertheless, it might be the most productive from a commercial perspective. Is that kind of a skill set in itself that
Yeah, commercial thinking is absolutely a skill set in itself. Yeah, that's something, I think that's something very hard to learn. And this is partly why some analysts who come in from an econometrics or business background actually do very well as well, because maybe they might not be as technically gifted as their peers, but they know what will drive the business and they're focused on that. That makes them very effective.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, for you as well, were you, you know, from what was your kind of background then, and what do you feel has allowed you to kind of build those instincts? Is it, do you feel as though you were more, you came more naturally to it, or was it something that, you know, you yourself had to kind of work on quite a bit?
It's a bit of both. So when I first started, I was enjoying learning my technical skills and learning how to be an analyst. And, you know, I just enjoyed helping my stakeholders at that point. You know, they'd ask things, and at times I wouldn't even necessarily know why they wanted them, but I'd do my best to give them what they needed. And I got, you know, as a junior, you kind of can derive quite a bit of satisfaction from behaving that way, and you can do well behaving that way. And, you know, rightfully so. And as you move up towards the more senior levels, you know, to justify why you should be there, people are expecting you to have done work that they've seen make an impact to the business. And naturally, you know, and I was lucky with some of the work I got to do. Some of that work had big impacts to our, you know, financial numbers and to how we looked at our business strategy in general. So that, and doing those projects actually helped me develop that commercial mindset of looking to prioritize the things I did according to the most value for the business.
Interesting. Do you think that there's, you know, still a lot of kind of values in, you know, mentors in like the most formal way, you know, like allocation of mentors and things, or, you know, the access to the information that we have now? I think you can kind of make, you know, your own way, and you can kind of take bits from what other people are saying, maybe, you know, digitally, online, whatever. But you kind of, I don't know if you had those kind of mentorship or that kind of more formalized experience, but, you know, just out of curiosity, I suppose, do you think that there's still value in something like that?
I do, because even though data is different to other parts of the business, there's still a lot in common. So naturally, as you become more senior in data, you do have to start managing other people. Now, that you know, I think that's something you should always get mentorship for, because, you know, you can learn from example, but you won't see the whole picture. And that's where I've really benefited from mentors I've had who helped me learn to manage a team. But at the same time, yes, I've gone and done my own research. I've kept up on my reading. I've also taken part in some of the free courses that my company has run for leadership. Those have been helpful, you know, with recruitment, with having to manage difficult situations. So there's a good mixture of how you develop. And certainly in terms of like a commercial, how you navigate around the business, it's always useful to have someone who maybe isn't as formal as a mentor, but someone who knows a bit more about the politics of what goes on in the company you work for.
You know, the direction that, you know, data's going, and obviously the tech that's available to us now, how conscious are you of, I guess, next, what's coming next? And it's an interesting position that we're in, I think, because we know how quickly tech's evolving, but again, almost to the point that we were making earlier, you know, it's not always the most straightforward move to just go with the latest and greatest anymore, so you have to kind of manage that. So, you know, from your perspective, is there kind of a process that you've kind of allocated now to make sure that, one, you know, you're keeping on top of what the latest and greatest is and how it, you know, can potentially be productive for you. But at the same time, you know, having the ability and having a strategy to say no to new techs as well.
Yeah. So I guess I'll go through kind of the change in tech that I've seen. So, you know, when I first started, everyone had an on-prem database of some kind, whether that was something as basic as Access or something like an Oracle or SQL Server. So I've come across both Oracle and SQL Server in most of the places I've worked. So that's typically what people have had. And then about 5 years ago, everyone started talking about, you know, they started using the buzzword big data, which could be annoy some people in data, but it's generally been a good thing. But because of that, you know, talking about some of the large quantities of data that big data would generate, we naturally moved towards some of the open source systems like Hadoop and Spark. So Spark is probably a bit more recent. And while those tools are, you know, have been much better than the previous, you know, single server or on-prem solutions, they are actually quite difficult to look after operationally, and they're not always very user friendly. So I've seen, you know, big companies, start investing in these Hadoop projects, and it takes them a good 3-4 years to build up the teams to look after them, get the infrastructure into the company, start getting the data in, and then start using it. It's taken that long. And what's happened in the meantime is that because of the drawbacks to these systems, new contenders have come out. So things like Google BigQuery and the Google Cloud Platform in general, Snowflake, these systems give you the benefit of these distributed open source systems like Hadoop and Spark, but with the simplicity of use and of say what you're used to with an on-prem implementation, and also with much lower data operations costs. It's actually, we're kind of entering a golden age for data storage and data warehousing with these types of products out there.
Interesting, right? Yeah, it's a fascinating time. Do you ever, I mean, I suppose I'm always really optimistic and I think that it's all positive, how quickly tech's moving, but is it ever a concern of yours? I suppose maybe it needs to be that the kind of the tech moves so much quicker these days than, you know, people can kind of get on board and utilize it. That sort of lag seems to be kind of increasing by the year.
I'd say partway through that kind of history of data warehouse technology I described, I was getting a bit worried because I was, during my time at Worldpay, we were seeing things like Hadoop come in, and, you know, initially they didn't have things like Hive, which allowed you to query it with normal SQL. You'd have to learn something new like NoSQL, which isn't as straightforward to use, and not everyone would be comfortable doing. So that was a bit concerning. There was all these new technologies coming in which required new skill sets to manage, and the people just weren't there to manage all of those different systems. There just weren't enough of them. But now that we're moving to this kind of abstraction from those complex systems with these systems like BigQuery and Snowflake, it seems less scary than it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, because these systems are so easy to use. They're, in a way, they're easier than their old on-prem. They're a lot easier than the old on-prem systems to use and to manage.
Interesting. I think it's exciting, mate. I mean, you must feel kind of, you know, I guess lucky in a way that you kind of fell into this career, and it is literally at, you know, I don't know whether it was a conscious effort. I mean, maybe it was, but, you know, to be at this point where, you know, data is literally, you know, it's driving everything now, and it's probably the most fascinating space in tech. Does it all feel like very exciting, and, you know, do you feel kind of, you know, very kind of privileged at the same time to be involved in it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's not something when I went to university, I did maths with management. I didn't know that I'd end up in analytics. I knew that I liked the numeric side of things and I liked the idea of applying it in business. So that, you know, that's a natural fit to be in analytics, but I didn't even know that existed when I went into university. And then when I came out, I didn't actually look to do that. I applied like everyone else did for various internships at big companies. I ended up in Big Four accounting. It wasn't really for me. The bit that I liked about it was the analysis. So I chose to become an analyst, and that's how I fell into it. And I'm very fortunate because, you know, I get to do something I really enjoy doing every day. But without having, you know, planned out that career in advance, really.
Great. It's awesome. And David, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, mate. We're about half an hour now, if you can believe it. But thank you, mate, so much for kind of sharing your insights today. It was a pleasure talking with you. And, you know, thank you for articulating everything so well for us. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.